It's now or never. Come hold me tight. Kiss me, my darling. Be mine tonight.
Sheary waits for it. Goes cross rink, it goes to Schultz. Now to Crosby, too hard off the boards, but he finds it. Crosby in the Penguins, left wing circle, over to Kunitz. Shot, score! Chris Kunitz wins it for the Pittsburgh Penguins as Crosby sets him up. And ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has just left the building. Kunitz with a game winner, his second of the night. And the Penguins are going on to play the Nashville Predators, and you know what? You can spit shine your shoes, baby. The Penguins are going to go dancing with Lord Stanley once again.
From Toronto to Los Angeles, it's the fourth period live with David Pagnotta and Dennis Bernstein.
It's now or never.
Stanley Cup Final gets underway Monday. And you're right. Now or never. They got to max 7 games to get this done. Get 4 wins in 7. Or 4. Or 5 or 6 and all that. You know, whatever. There's math involved. But this is it. Stanley Cup Final gets underway Monday in Pittsburgh between the Nashville Predators and the Penguins. I'm Dave Pagnotta here in Toronto. That's Dennis Bernstein in Los Angeles. DB, you excited? We're going to Pittsburgh tomorrow.
Who programmed that open, Dave?
That was... some guy just sent an email.
Was that brilliant? I thought it was actually brilliant. Jesse executed it fantastic. Wow, that was even better than I thought. Of course we're excited. We're in the last mile of the marathon, Dave. 26 miles. We're at the 26th mile with two teams that have been, you know, are left standing. Certainly not 100% each, but yet this, look, of the four teams that were remaining, Dave, I think this is the best matchup we could have got.
Yeah, and look, this is what everybody expected from Nashville at the start of the season. You know, we had 4 of our 7 writers on the fourth period pick the Predators to go to the Stanley Cup Final at the beginning of the season. And nobody picked them to win. But that was at the beginning of the season. Now, our picks go up for the Stanley Cup Final later today. And a few of them have selected the Nashville Predators to win the Stanley Cup. And you're right. This is where we're at right now from the Western. I know. I believe we'll see a repeat of Stanley Cup champions, the first time in the Stanley Cup era. And I think you picked the same.
Yeah. Just a couple of things before we start, because we'll probably do 2 hours on these two teams. So at the top, I just want to mention a couple of things not Stanley Cup related. Well, one partially is, but I think the first one, since it's been a week since we've been on the air. Nicole Anderson announcing she's cancer-free.
Yeah.
She's my number one star this week, so that's fantastic news. You know, Craig came up short in the final against Pittsburgh, but that's the best news when she announced yesterday that she's cancer-free. So I just wanted to make that first mention. And, Dave, I don't think you saw it, because you're probably going into the studio, but I saw the PK Subban feature on ESPN this morning. It was fantastic. It was really, really good. A really in-depth look at him. Jeremy Schapp did a great interview. It was a half hour. So if you haven't DVR'd it, do it. Check it out. PK being PK, obviously, they open up the segment with him singing in Nashville, Johnny Cash. So, but it was a really good look at PK and good timing for the Stanley Cup Final. So if you're a PK fan or not, or maybe you're thinking about being one, you should certainly watch a really insightful 30 minutes on him with Jeremy Schapp on ESPN.
And as you mentioned, we'll be dissecting this Stanley Cup Final for...
We'll be diluting it, too, after 2 hours, Dave, no problem.
Yeah, that for sure. We'll have Lindsay Raleigh. She's the sideline reporter for the Predators for Fox Sports Tennessee in about an hour's time to talk about Nashville side of things. And from Pittsburgh side of things, we'll speak with Phil Bourque, the Pens radio analyst, about an hour and a half from now, or just under that, to get Pittsburgh side of things. Coming up shortly... Josh Brewster, the Ducks post-game radio host, will be coming on the program to talk about the meltdown that happened in Anaheim and what's next, really, for the Ducks. And in just a few seconds' time here. We'll be chatting with Pete Jensen. He's the senior fantasy editor for NHL.com, and see what kind of impacts some players have made throughout these playoffs and which guys to look for here in the Stanley Cup Final, which gets underway, as we mentioned, tomorrow with Media Day happening as we speak.
Hey, you know, Dave, with Pete, I was trading texts with him yesterday. I think we're going to chip in and speculate on some tickets for Game 3 in Nashville. I think then we'll probably touch on it in his segment. But the prices are, Dave, they're Super Bowl level pricing.
You were saying tickets. That, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'll tip a little bit. It's $6,500 to sit on the glass in Nashville for Game 3.
For one ticket.
I'm going to sell my armrest for my media seat for $2,000.
Right.
So if anybody out there wants to cut in the building and sit on my armrest, you know, we're good for $2,000. But, yeah, we'll go over a couple of things with Pete. There's a couple of places. With all the great things that Pittsburghs have done in the first three rounds, there's some guys who have really underachieved, Dave, and I'll wait until Pete gets on the line to talk about where they probably need some additional firepower as much as they have. And, you know, Geno Malkin's been great. Sid obviously made the play to win Game 7 to Kunitz. But there's some guys that need to step up, I think, if they're going to get by Nashville, because I think they're certainly going to face a tougher defense in the Predators, you know, that core four that they have.
Well, we can jump right into that mix right now. Pete Jensen, great. The senior fantasy editor for NHL.com, now joining us on the line. How are you?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. And, happy Memorial Day weekend.
That's right. Same to you. And you know, media day today, game one gets underway tomorrow. Just initial expectations kind of coming into another really exciting Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun one to watch, I think, just because of the I see there being a glaring weakness for Nashville, obviously up the middle without Ryan Johansson. And I think that Nashville's defense has the potential to make Pittsburgh's defense a glaring weakness, something that none of the teams to this point have been able to do. So I'm really interested in those two matchups, because I do think that Pittsburgh, as well as they've played and as amazing as it's been to see them find a way one way or the other, one player steps up, they play, you know, they get outshot multiple times in the Capitals series, still find a way, really had their hands full against the Senators. I think that there's a potential here for Nashville, even without Johansson, to have enough firepower offensively, really throw something at them that's different from any of the other teams that they've faced so far in their defense. And if Pecorine stands tall, they have the perfect combinations to be able to make this a deep series and potentially finally beat the Penguins, something that no one has done in any of the series they've played over the past 2 years.
Pete, I know you and I traded text yesterday. $1,000 to sit in the end seat in the upper bowl, right? Is that, to me, that's I mean, it's great for the game. It's great that the fans are loving this, but isn't that's Super Bowl price tickets, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when we were texting, I've never seen anything like that. I remember when the Super Bowl was in New York, the tickets were not. I know they're normally pretty pricey, but
yeah.
It wasn't quite like that. I've never, to be honest, I mean, I hear StubHub for tickets all the time for different sports. I've never seen anything like that for any game in any sport. So I know there's, you know, the situation where the Predators are trying to be loyal to their season ticket holders.
Yes.
And they're trying to, you know, sell tickets to the surrounding states. And I know teams have done that in the past, and you know, that's their mindset with that. And I think it's just going to be crazy to see that game unfold, because if Nashville can steal, even if Nashville doesn't steal one of the first two games, that's going to be quite a scene. But imagine if they do, they could really put Pittsburgh on notice here. And just that whole scene, the crowd and everything we've seen from that crowd in the postseason, I think could be taken even further up a notch in that game three.
Yeah, and then the following week, I think Game 6 it coincides with the CMA Fan Fest. So, good luck getting a hotel room downtown for less than.
And just a quick. $7,800 each. The lowest ticket right now on StubHub is $1,100.
That's fantastic. It's great
for Game 3.
It's absolutely great for the game. Hey, Pete, I want to touch on, you know, obviously Pittsburgh's going to win this with offense, but two of the guys that really delivered for them last year haven't really done much this series. Now, one has been injured, but I'm talking about Nick Bonino and Carl Hagelin. Last year, they were an integral part of that championship. You know, they had four lines rolling. Last year, Nick had four goals, 14 assists, 18 points. This season, he's got 2, 3, and 5. Same thing with Carl Hagelin, 6, 10, and 16 last season, plus 9. This one now, granted, he's been injured, but one goal, the only point he has in minus 3. Are they going to have to be better for them to beat Nashville at this point?
Yeah, I mean, those two haven't really had statistically good seasons at all. I know you mentioned Hagelin has been dealing with injuries, but even last year in the regular season after getting traded to Pittsburgh, he was putting up great even strength point production. And I agree. I think that the effort we saw from Chris Kunitz is going to need to be replicated by a number of players across that lineup. I think that the third line with Hagelin and Bonino needs to have at least a game or two where they, you know, where they get in on the score sheet. You're going to need some point production from guys on defense like Trevor Daly, who's, you know, been solid defensively, but again, to be able to match what Nashville does from the back mm-hmm. end out, I think you're going to need some of those guys, Justin Schultz, Trevor Daly, Ron Hainsey even, to chip in some points here because, they seem to be overmatched in that category at least.
Yeah, and you mentioned Trevor Daly because I like the way he's been active. He's been activating a lot, going deep into the zone, penetrating, and I think that could be a big difference. And I think he probably recognizes that they need a little bit more from the back end. I want to flip over to Nashville, and you know, Kunitz made a great statement at the end of Game 7 that, you know, facing the Predators is like having on their defense, they have four Erik Karlssons. I don't necessarily agree they have four Erik Karlssons because I don't think they're all, you know, there's a couple of probably right. either current or potential Norris Trophy winner playing. But I wanted to focus on Matthias Ekholm, probably the least heralded of the four, but who did a fantastic job defending Ryan Getzlaff and Ryan Kessler in the previous series. Just talk about his game and his maturity and how, like, he probably is on the same level defensively. Certainly he's not going to provide the point production that the other guys like Josi and Subban and Ellis has in the first couple of rounds. But just more about his game, because he's really the most unheralded of the core four that they have there.
Yeah, he's definitely one of the most well-rounded defensemen in the game, and most people, general hockey fans, maybe have never heard of him prior to this postseason or maybe last year. I know he had a great series last year against the San Jose Sharks offensively, and then, of course, what he's done this postseason, teaming with Subban at even strength and shutting down the top goal scorers in his way. He is he's exceptional at corralling the puck in the defensive zone and then getting the offense going from the back end out. And he's just, whether you're talking about him or Josi, they are two of the most afford for what they are on both ends of the ice, puck-moving defensemen who are strong in their own zone. I think those are the two best value contracts among defense in the league when you look at what some of the other guys are making around the league. So kudos to David Poile for putting that together and, of course, swinging the Subban for Weber Weber for Subban trade, which just made them that much more mobile and gave Matthias Ekholm an added dimension to his game, having that exposure to Subban in so many different situations.
So Pete, can we get a prediction from you in this series?
Yeah, I mean, I did. The thing is, I picked Nashville at the beginning of the season. I kind of lost faith in them a little bit. But I've seen enough from them that I'm not ready to rule them out, even without Johansson. I think that that defense has an opportunity to contain Malkin and Crosby, and it really comes down to can Pecorine put together a 930 or 940 save percentage over the course of a 6-7 game series. I think Nashville can win one of the first two games, which could put them in position to close out this series at home in Game 6. I would pick Nashville. Obviously, the safer pick is Pittsburgh.
Sure.
I've picked against Pittsburgh in the past, and it hasn't worked out too well for me the past two seasons. But, I think there is something special about this Nashville group, and I think just they've found a way to click at the right time. They had the high potential all season, and I think this is a big stage that they are ready for. sometimes you come into these games and a team might be a little starstruck, but I don't see that happening from Nashville. I think there is a real chance that Nashville can pull this series out in 6 or 7 games.
I agree with you. I think it's going to be a fantastic series. Senior fantasy editor for NHL.com, Pete Jensen, who's now becoming a regular on this show. Pete, appreciate the time, and we'll catch up with you during the series, okay?
Yeah, sounds great. Thanks for having me, and enjoy game one on Monday.
I still can't – it would help if I accidentally turned my mic off, but I still can't – I still can't get over these prices. I'm just floored.
And scaled against the Pittsburgh prices, where I think, what, it's $255 for standing room or something like that?
Yeah, $255 for standing room. And center ice, if you're from Pittsburgh, it's section 102. It's a third row for $1,500 a pop.
They used to win in Dave.
Yeah, I get it. But $1,100 for the lowest seat, the lowest price in Nashville?
First Stanley Cup? Bandwagon. That's a big bandwagon.
That's a
they
huge
got a big,
band.
Big old country band on that bandwagon, Dave. Bluegrass too.
And it's not like these. Oh, hold on. $8,500 premium lower bowl, 107, whatever row double D is. $8,500. And it's not like these. It jumps from like 1,100 to 1,500 to 700 to 1,700. It's, you know, like there's a lot of tickets here that are in the $2,000-3,000 range.
Yeah, they are. It's great.
Like a lot of them. I'm scrolling and I'm still not out of $2,000. Okay, now we're starting to enter the high teens. It's still, anyway, you can look this up yourselves. But I'm just doing this for my own amusement. But, it looks like they enjoy their hockey out there, as we've been trying to tell everybody for the last 2-3 years.
Look, it's game three, so it's the first game ever, so it's historical, right? So that there's a premium on history, right? So, but David, they're down. Let's say Pittsburgh's up 3-0. What do you think the prices for game four will be?
Yeah,
ain't gonna be no $8,000.
I don't think so.
No, but it's and Dave, I mean, you're like me. You're an adrenaline junkie, right? You want to be there because it's the place to be. And there, so you're paying a price to witness history. So you can't sometimes. It's, you know, that's an old MasterCard commercial, priceless, right? It's priceless, right? So I get it. I get the speculation. It's a free market. If people want to sell their ticket for $8,000, fine. I wish, you know, if somebody came to me, we have King season tickets, and somebody wanted to pay me $4,500 for a game six. I would, you know, sit in the press box and sell my $4,500 ticket. So I get it. I understand it. But this is history. This is historic. And, yeah, the team has been embraced by the city. So it's been, you know, fantastic. So when you have that passion in that city that the fans have, you're going to have prices like that. It's just – it's amazing. It is stunning. You know, that's – like I said, it's Super Bowl price tickets for, you know, game three of a hockey series. That's great.
Mike Fisher, by the way, on ice for practice as we speak.
Good news.
That is very good news for the Nashville Predators. We will take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the team that the Predators knocked out, the Anaheim Ducks, with Josh Brewster. This is the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio. So gone and get to clapping. Go pop it for a plan, pop it for me. Turn around and drop it for a plan, drop it for me. I'll rent some beach house in Miami. Wake up with no jammies. Lobster tail for dinner. Julio served that scampi. Back at you on the program. It is the Fourth Period Live. I'm Dave in Toronto. That's Dennis in LA. We're just mentioning Mike Fisher practicing for the Nashville Predators. It looks like their lines right now have Fisher centering the second line with Arvidsson and Neal. So barring any setbacks, good chance we're going to see Mike Fisher in the lineup tomorrow for game one, which certainly is not a bad thing.
Yeah, he needs to get Arvidsson going too. He really hasn't done much. You know, a 30-goal score hasn't really contributed at all. You know, it's been Forsberg.
Yeah.
It's been the defense, but
Neal,
nice if,
Neal when
yeah, Neal's chipped in. Yeah. But Arvidsson needs to step up here, and certainly he's going to miss Rijo, so that's part of the issue. But you know, sometimes you just got to play with who you're, you know, the cards you're dealt with. So we'll see.
Right, exactly. So I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how these two teams match up against each other. More so than anything for me is to see which lines are going to form against, you know, who's going to go after Crosby's line, who's going after Malkin, Kessel, and Wilson. You know, which defensive pairings for Nashville are going to be matching up against those guys? Are the Pens going to try to, you know, reverse that and say, well, we want Malkin's line up against Ekholm and Piqué versus whomever else? So I'm interested to see how that's going to line up tomorrow in game one. But for now, we're going to shift gears a little bit. We'll talk about Nashville in about 30, 40 minutes time, a little bit more about them. Right now, we got to talk about the team that they knocked out of here, that being the Anaheim Ducks. Josh Brewster joining us back on the program, host of the postgame show for the Ducks. How are you, buddy? Welcome.
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
Fantastic. I'm okay.
He's playing less than 100%, allegedly.
The evidence is inconclusive, I think.
Right.
Yeah, he's going to drive 9,500 miles to Pittsburgh tomorrow, but he says he's a little under the weather. So.
Yeah. The voice isn't up to snub, but it's okay. We're battling.
Until the next segment, Dave.
We're battling through. The team that certainly battled through and got to the Stanley Cup Final, the Nashville Predators, did that over the Anaheim Ducks. Why? What happened? Looked like things were aligning themselves pretty well for the Ducks in the first, you know, bit of the playoffs, and then roadblock.
Well, you know, I'll say that I think that what happened was sort of a battle of attrition, and I think that the Predators played a team game. They executed their team game and dictated the pace of the game and what was going to happen in the game. Let's say, you know, I don't know if you want to say in terms of percentage, but I'd give them, you know, a 9 out of 10, and then the Ducks were able to do what they wanted to do maybe at about a 7 out of 10, you know what I mean? It was one of those things where ultimately, you know, it's funny that it's an interesting situation when Fisher and Johansson go out, but then Eves and Raquel are out, and all these injuries are all over the place, and so you get guys like Colton Sissons coming to the fore. And I really think that with the Ducks, off the bat I would say this, that the, you know, Kessler and Cogliano and Vermette and Thompson and guys like that, really, if there was one or two or three more goals out of that group, maybe even just two more goals, we might be talking about an entirely different Stanley Cup final. I truly believe that if they would have come at the right time. So I think that, you know, in future years, a guy like Kessler might have to think about, well, you know, as spectacularly as he played as a defensive forward, you know, maybe his best defense is his offense, and then maybe sometimes he needs to think about, they need to shut me down as much as I need to shut them down.
JB, reflecting back, was this season successful for them?
Absolutely.
Okay, I think why?
I say you didn't, if your expectation is you have to win the Stanley Cup, then no, it's not a But I'll tell you why it's
your opinion, yeah.
In four straight years, you have the choke label hanging on you, and it's very black and white, right? And you can say the Stars didn't do what they needed to do. But this year, you go to a conference final, which is a rare occurrence for any franchise, quite honestly, if you look at it. And they went very deep. They won a Game 7 that they needed to win, and they got performances. Corey Perry came in often enough with overtime game-winning goals. Mm-hmm. That's why I point to a couple other guys who you're only a couple goals away from turning the series, okay?
Right.
And I think that you look at Perry contributing that. And then you look at Getzlaff having two tremendous series, okay? And in the, you know, when I think about Sidney Crosby in 09, if I remember correctly, his final wasn't as nearly as good as some of his earlier rounds. Mm-hmm. And there's got to be a lot of guys pulling on the rope, i.e. the Nashville Predators. And I think that it's a mixed bag for the Ducks. You can say, okay, well, Getzlaff certainly turned in a whale of a performance. You can say Perry makes you think twice now because he had a real down regular season, but he did come through at times in very important times in the playoffs. So you wonder what's going to happen there, because I do think that's a little bit of a question. He seems to have lost a step, but at the same time, you look at what he did in the playoffs. Then you got to look up and down the lineup and say, why didn't we get a little bit more from Kessler for what we're paying for Kessler, just in the offensive game? And then there's some question marks in the net. You know, can Gibson stay healthy? What happened to Bernier? He was like 21-7, you know, during a stretch of the season, right? He was, I think that was, I don't know if it was his grand total, but I remember during his tremendous run when Gibson was injured for a month, and then he comes in and just lays a stinker in the most important game. Let's be honest now. So, you know, I think it's a mixed bag for the Ducks, but I don't think that the sense of despair that came out of the last four seasons
got
is there. I mean, I think, you know, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally. Now, you keep bringing up Getzlaf, Perry, Kessler.
Yeah.
Perry and Getzlaf will be 32 opening night.
Yep.
Kessler will be 33. Is the window closing? Is it closed? Is still opportunity here? What do you think for next season and next season beyond that? Is the championship window still open for this team?
Yeah, the one thing about the Ducks that you can say about the organization is that in the last well over a decade now, they have not had to rebuild. They've never had to tear it all up and rebuild. So as far as the Ducks are concerned, I would say, yeah, the window's open. I don't think you say it's as open as many inches as it was before.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a whole slew of serious issues with regard to the cap.
Right.
That we could talk about for another hour, but the you know, you've got a lot of things coming up now between the Golden Knights and the Cap and all that. But that's just reflective of a team that wants to go into the postseason with nine defensemen, and they used eight of them, and they needed it. And they needed all kinds of organizational strength and depth, and there's a lot of guys they hung on to. But it'll be really interesting to see what the capologists at the Ducks, who really know the cause and effect relationships here, what they're going to come up with, what guys like Dave McNabb are going to come up with in terms of how to handle this, because this is a lot to handle, obviously, when you have to keep Jakob Silfverberg. He can't become a Golden Knight. He's the best trade Murray ever made. And Fowler's going to have to be extended because that's the most important defenseman they've developed in the last generation. So it's an interesting situation cap-wise, and they'll be maybe the most interesting team to watch during the summer.
And providing that happens, providing they keep Silfverberg like they obviously should, keep him protected, leads you to assume that a defenseman is going to get plucked away. So that brings you down to eight. And then there's Lindholm and Vatanen, who are going to be out of action for a significant period of time, probably going to miss the start of the season. But there's talk of Vatanen being the guy who's probably more likely to be moved for some pieces up front or a piece up front. Do you see them going that route? Is this finally the time period, because of the amount of depth they have on that blue line, with the emergence of some of their young players on the back end? Do you see this finally being the time that Murray pulls the trigger and moves, let's say, for argument's sake, Sammy Vatanen for somebody that can fill in on a top six role?
Sure. I mean, it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. And you've got Brandon Montour pressing for a job. And he brings a lot of the skill set that Sammy Vatanen brings. So in the world of caps, what are you going to do? Now, that's just what occurs to me. There's other ways of getting there, you know, via trades. I mean, I don't know. You know, I mean, there's a lot of ways that these things usually shake out. It's usually not what you expect. But you would have to think that there's enough defensive assets. You also wonder about whether they're going to, you know, ask Kevin Bieksa to do them a solid and figure out a way that they can move him along through buyout or whatever they have to do with him. You know, you don't know what they're going to do, but it's going to be interesting because there's all kinds of defensive assets you have to figure something gives, because you don't, you know, you're not here to donate to the Golden Knights, and you've got to watch out for Josh Manson. And,
right.
You know, what do you know, like I said, Jakob Silfverberg's the best trade that Murray's made, and he's not just going to say, well, let's just let this go.
JB, you comfortable with Cam Farrell getting $6 million per for 8 years?
Oh, I thought it would be more than that. And if I'm his agent, it would be. I mean, I would absolutely give him more. You know, it's interesting when you look at some of these performances, gets lost when the club loses a game. You look at Cam Fowler, and I think it was game five. This is as good a defense as you know, Erik Karlsson or anybody is giving you, you know, and whether he can do that on a more regular basis remains to be seen. But I think that Cam Fowler starts to enter the equation of who are the elite defensemen in the league. I thought that his performance was brilliant, quite honestly, in a lot of these key games. And I think he gave you everything you could ask for from a defenseman. So you've put a ton into his talents. You've developed him. He lived with Scott Niedermeyer. He's a Duck through and through, and you drafted him, and you've spent all this time watching his career build, and you really look at that and go, well, I'm not letting that go. So I think the price will be quite high, quite honestly, and whether he scales the heights and becomes an elite defenseman on a regular basis, I don't know. But he's certainly showing signs, and he's still a young guy at 25.
Right. One final one. Let's talk about the coach. A lot of speculation when Randy came back to town. You know, Murray had to talk to Getzlaff and Perry and the leadership about bringing him back, and they were all for it. To me, it changed men, right? Still didn't get them to the promised land. Like, you know, he hasn't taken the team any farther than Bruce did. Bruce got him to the conference final in 2013 against Chicago. But just talk about Randy's season here and how he's acclimated or re-acclimated himself to the modern-day player, right? This is a different league than when he left Anaheim. It's much more player-driven league. So, JB, just your thoughts on the season for Randy Carlisle behind the bench.
I think one of the moments when he was frank with the press and he said, you know, I've learned that it's nowadays it's more about what the players want. And the players have acknowledged, and Perry, I believe it was Perry, acknowledged that, you know, he's a much easier guy for the players to talk to and express themselves to. So if that's the case, then as I've said, I think that, you know, a little over 90% of what Randy Carlisle was is still there, but there's a key element that's that I think the players find more receptive. I think he learned some lessons in Toronto, took some hard knocks, and you know, the media, you know, they don't always get it right, as you know, and I mean, they said the guy's finished. And, you know,
especially up here, JB, especially up here.
Game has passed him by. You can't handle the modern player. It's, I mean, come on. You know, the game has passed him by. Go to the slot and get shots to the net. Hello. You know, it's not this game has not passed him by, okay? So I think that he's been easier to deal with, and I think he's got a little softer tone even with the media, even though I always found him cordial. I don't find him quite as distant, and I think he's you know, I've talked to Randy enough between the when the Leafs days ended and the Ducks days were restarted. You know, I got to talk to Randy a little bit just when he was kind of doing pro scouting for the Leafs, and you know, I mean, he really is a very personable guy, and I think that came through a lot more this year. But look, as far as success goes, you go to a conference final, you've had a damn good year, and right. You know what unfolds in the future, I don't know, but take this out of it, I think the coaching job he did in the playoffs is undeniably brilliant, and the adjustments he made were tremendous. And you've got to give him a lot of credit for that, because I think he gave as much as a coach could give.
Putting a nice little bow on the Duck season, Josh Brewster, JB, thanks for always coming on with us. Appreciate it. And we assume you're going to be behind the mic next year for Duck Calls. Is that correct?
Of course. You know it. I'll talk to you in the fall, as always.
Okay. JB, thanks for all the great content this year. We'll talk to you in the fall.
All right, guys. Take care.
You know, I'm looking at this. I'm just looking at from our friends over at capfriendly.com.
They are our friends.
They've got the mock draft, expansion draft up here. And I'm making my selections as I've been doing for the last few months. Because I just have a lot of free time. But
yes,
I'm apparently. Looking at this. I'm looking at this and I'm going, okay. Let's say Bieksa waves his no move. Because I just don't see the Knights taking him. So you've got three defensemen to protect because you've got Kessler, Getzlaff, and Perry, and they're not going to let Silverberg walk.
And Raquel has to be protected. Right.
Right.
30-goal scorer. Come on.
So, you know, you figure you've got Perry, Getzlaff, Kessler, no moves, they're protected. Mm-hmm. Raquel, Silverberg, Cogliano. Mm-hmm. You've got four other guys that are going to be exposed as a forward. Vermette, Boal, Shaw, Wagner. But you've got one spot left. On defense, Fowler, Lindholm, Josh Manson. If they trade Sammy Vatanen before the protected lists need to be submitted,
right?
They get a forward. That solves their problems.
And here's the trade, Dave. And based on his playoff, the second line needs a left wing. And I love Andrew Cogliano, and he's great. And he's one of the best guys in the room. He's a third line left wing. He's not a second line left wing. And maybe part of the reason Kessler didn't produce in the playoffs was because he didn't have a comparable left wing on the other side. So if you made that trade for a left wing, and I'm not sure because the money would have to match up, or you could buy out Bieksa too. But the trade I would make would be for a left winger, because you got Raquel up with Getzlaff and Perry.
Mm-hmm.
You would have Silverberg, Kessler, and your left winger. And that would make a dynamic top six, even a more dynamic. Now, Kashe is a pretty good player. He's shown a lot. He showed a lot in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. That surprised me. He came out of nowhere. But
Nick Ritchie starting to get there.
Yeah, Nick could be the guy. He could be the guy. But I want to back my bets. And with the surplus you have, the one problem, Dave, is though you don't know how long Vatanen. You know, that could be a season-ending injury for Vatanen.
The risk you got to take if you're acquiring this guy.
Because if Murray's saying 4 to 5 months on Lindholm and longer, and wouldn't define what's going on with Vatanen, you know, and that's a tough injury, Dave. You know, a torn labrum, you can't lift your arm over your shoulders. For these guys to even play in the playoffs with torn labrums was ridiculous. It was insane. But that's the one caveat. Like, can you get a comparable, you know, not a top line left winger, but a second line left winger for a guy who might be out for 9 months? That's the question, right? What's the price? But that's the trade I would make. I think that's the one hole in this lineup. Unless you're buying Richie or Kashe to move up into that left wing position, I'm not. I would like a more established guy. Richie shows signs, but, you know, that bad penalty took in game six from hitting from behind, I'm not sold on him yet. Let him stay on the third line. And then get a comparable left wing that could pair with, like I said, Kessler and Silverberg.
All right, you got a couple minutes. I want to know some options. Outside of James Van Riemsdyk, who's always an option to go to Anaheim, I want to know some options of who could be on the second line and traded in a deal with Sammy Vatanen as a centerpiece.
All right, you give me 2 minutes. Thanks.
Yeah. You're a pro. You got this. We're going to take a break. This is the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio. We'll be right back.
The lovers of the bar is where I go. Mm-hmm. Me and my friends at the table doing shots, tripping fast, and then we talk slow. Mm-hmm. Come over and start up a conversation with just me, and trust me, I'll give it a chance. Now take my hand, stop, and the man on the jukebox, and then we start to dance. And now I'm singing like, girl, you know I want your love. Your love was handmade for somebody like me. Come on now, follow my lead. I may be crazy, don't mind me. Say, boy, let's not talk too much. Grab on my waist and put that body on me. I'm coming now, follow my lead. I'm coming now, follow my lead.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back to the program. It is the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio. We were just talking about the Ducks before the break. Gave Dennis some homework. 2 minutes. I came up with four options, DB.
Wow, you're better than me.
Four options. I don't know if any of them are going to work.
Go ahead.
But I got four. But what do you got?
For Vatanen?
Yeah, we're going to I should probably reiterate that we're going to trade. We're helping the Ducks out. We're trading Sammy Vatanen for a second line left winger. These are the centerpieces. There'll be other stuff that'll be added in between. That's up to Bob Murray and the other GM to figure it out. I'm sure they're listening. So you're welcome, guys. But Sammy Vatanen going away from Anaheim solves their crunch situation, providing Bieksa lifts his no move for the expansion draft. They get to protect Fowler, Lindholm, Josh Manson. They've already got six forwards they're probably going to protect. This is their seventh guy that they're acquiring. Problem solved. Everybody's happy except Vegas. Sorry, George, but, you know, we're doing our best here to help everybody, and you'll get some more D on the way. Just go to Minnesota. They got tons. But Sammy Vatanen's getting dealt. Who are we trading him for?
I only have one guy.
That's it?
I thought about Skinner maybe in Carolina, but they've got a lot of defense.
They're loaded back there.
All right. The one guy I have, team needs defense, is, and they've got a couple of Swedes on the team already, Alex Killorn.
See, I went to Tampa as well. But I went with a different guy. I went with Andre Palat, who's an RFA.
Right.
He needs to be protected. They've already got Killorn locked into a deal. He's got 1 year left, I think. He signed a long-term.
He's long-term deal, that's what I'm saying.
He signed a long-term deal. He's got a no-trade. a full no trade actually, until I think 2-3 seasons later, or four or something like that, midway through his contract. I was thinking Killorn as well, but then I'm going, wait, they got cap issues. They're going to have to sign Palat to around $4 million anyway.
You're going to have to offload money. It can't be a dollar-for-dollar trade, which is what Killorn would be.
So move Andre Palat, who's a left winger. He goes to your second line. That was my initial thought. Well, initially I thought Killorn as well, but then I remembered Palat's an RFA, checked it. Mm-hmm. That's my guy. If I'm Tampa, Palat, Vatanen centerpieces. Yes? No?
Sure. Now, what about I got another guy.
Okay.
Burakovsky on Washington.
Oh, I think he's going to be there. He's their new like second line first.
They're
line.
They're going to lose Alsner, right?
Yeah.
The other guys are getting older.
Shattenkirk's gone. I think Burakovsky is going to be their.
Wait. Left winger?
I got two other guys. I'm surprised you haven't mentioned one of them yet.
Alex Ovechkin.
Oh, jeez.
No? Okay.
That's
Throwing
a stretch.
A first rounder?
No? That's a stretch.
Okay.
I have a guy who's been brought up throughout the season and then it quieted down. I don't know if it'll happen, but as a centerpiece for a Vatanen trade, or maybe vice versa, Gabriel Landeskog. I know.
Yeah,
I know
you'd have to throw in more.
You'd have
to give back a forward because that's what they want, right? So you'd have to throw maybe Andre Cache and probably a high pick. Right?
Well, they're shopping Tyson Barrie, or they're entertaining calls anyway for Tyson Barrie.
They should entertain calls for everyone.
Then they should. That's true.
They calls for a GM while they're at it.
Apparently, the owner's already doing that and not telling anybody.
It's a dirty business.
That's
Dave.
Another great story.
It's the business we choose to be in, Dave.
It really is. And Godfather was on in the background here, which was awesome.
Really? You had Godfather
it
on?
It was on. Oh. We turned on the TVs. Godfather was on in the back. It's like they knew I was coming.
That's true. You were set up in the causeway.
But this is the greatest thing.
What about the guy that gets traded every year that doesn't get traded? He plays in Buffalo, and he's a left winger.
Oh, wow. Well, Evander Kane hasn't done anything wrong in the last 3 weeks, so they love him again.
He had a great season.
He did.
And he gets along with everyone. And I, all kidding aside, I think he is part of the solution up there.
100%.
I think
said
they should
it.
Extend him, and he's happy there, and he's productive. But if there was going to be a trade to be made, that type of trade, you'd have to talk to the agent and try to get an extension done. But yeah, I think Evander's part of the solution up there. Not part of he's finally matured. He finally got it right. He got thrown out of basically two dressing rooms. But
it's easy to throw those kinds of jokes like I just did 3 seconds ago. But you're right, and I've said it on Buffalo radio station. I've said it on other radio stations. I think we've all said it. We mutually agree. He's part of the resolution for the Buffalo Sabres to turn that thing around.
But you're right about one thing, Dave. It is only Memorial Day weekend.
Vanna's
got the whole summer to go on Instagram and flash the green and stuff like that.
Well, we're going down to Vegas for the award, so if he wants to join us,
come on, yeah.
We have a great time. Quickly,
reserve him a booth.
Quickly, right before we go to break, I got two other options. Gustav Nyquist.
Yep.
Detroit need help on the back end. He's got some term left on his deal. Maybe that's a way to go.
Like him, yeah, like that deal.
And then the other option. Train him to Dallas for the 3rd overall pick. Dallas wants defense.
Ooh.
Sit on that one. Maybe, no?
Teams in a championship window.
Could they get a better player?
Not immediate help for next season.
Yeah, well, it frees up some cap space.
But I like it. It frees up some cap space. I like it from a cap standpoint, sure.
Well, we'll see. We'll take a break. We'll discuss a couple other options. And some other stuff going on in the National Hockey League with some teams and what could happen over the offseason before we get into things a little more hardcore between the Pittsburgh Penguins and Nashville Predators. Lindsay Raleigh will be joining us to talk about the Preds. Phil Bourque about Pittsburgh in the second hour. We still have some time here in the first. This is the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio.
tell me what you really like. Baby, I can take my time. We don't ever have to fight. Just take it step by step. I can see it in your eyes, 'cause they never tell me lies. I can feel that body shake and the heat between your legs. You've been scared of love and what it did to you.
Welcome back to the program. This is the Fourth Period Live. We're talking Stanley Cup Final. We're helping the Ducks. We're just making some magic here, DB.
That's right.
You know,
hockey and radio magic at the same time.
That's right. Okay.
I feel, hey Dave, I know you're on your phone, so I got a quiz for you.
Okay.
Ready?
Well, okay.
Go to the NHL standings for the season. Give me the one team that doesn't make the playoffs next season that made it this season.
Oh. Man. I gave you 2 minutes on my quiz.
I don't care. I'm a tough grader.
See, Jesse just said Lightning. Make it. I agree.
That made it, that won't make it next season.
That's what I'm trying to out. That's what I'm trying to piece. Boston.
Okay.
I think Boston out, Tampa in.
I'll give you a shocker in the West.
I don't know who else. In the West.
San Jose.
Ooh. Wow. Really? You know,
What's happening with Thornton and Marlowe?
Yeah. You know what? I don't think they'd be the only West team.
To fall out?
Yeah. I got another one.
Go ahead.
People aren't going to like me.
They don't like you already.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, St. Louis.
Oh.
Yep. Yep. And I agree from the San Jose side of things. As of now, barring there being no, you know, what happens with Thornton and Marlowe and this and that, but Edmonton's getting better. Calgary's getting better. Calgary needs to figure out what's going on between the pipes, first and foremost. If it's Elliott,
the backup goalie in Pittsburgh, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. The Ducks will keep moving along. Minnesota's going to get going.
Solid.
Nashville, Chicago. I think LA's going to get their, you know, acts together. They'll fight for a playoff spot. And, you know, we'll see. I think Winnipeg's pushing hard. I mean, they got to figure out their goaltending
situation.
Yeah, but
then what are you X-ing out, Minnesota?
No, I'm X-ing out St. Louis.
Well, two teams can't climb up.
You're
saying Winnipeg.
Yeah, Winnipeg's in St. Louis's division. Winnipeg replaces St. Louis. L.A. replaces San Jose. And then you got Dallas.
No.
Bishop now. They got to get some. I mean, they need some other
movement. How about the guys that stand right in front of Bishop? Those guys.
Yeah, well, that's.
Not the guys further ahead. Just the guys that are right in front of him.
You're right. That's the other thing. And I'm looking at the East, and I'm going New Jersey. No. Detroit. No.
No.
Carolina will push. I don't think they're there yet. Philadelphia will be in and around where they are now. The Islanders, same situation. I think Boston gets X'd out. I think Tampa takes over. And I don't see Columbus regressing. And
what about the other Eastern Conference finalist?
They'll be fine. They'll be fine. Come on. They got a lot of changes to make. We'll talk about that in about 40 minutes time. This is the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio. Wrapping up Hour 1. Hour 2 gets underway in just a little bit, with talk of Nashville and Pittsburgh as the Stanley Cup Final gets underway tomorrow in, you got it, Pittsburgh. This is the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio.
Somebody save your soul, 'cause you've been sinning in the city. I know too many.
back at ya. Hour two of the fourth period live on NHL Network Radio, Sirius XM 91. Getting underway. Lots to talk about. Lots going on. No random questions being thrown at people without prep time to get ready for it, Dennis. Jeez.
It was a good question. Come on.
I gave you 2 minutes.
It's a great question.
It was a great question. I gave you 2 minutes. You put me on the spot.
You forget the great production value of this show today. The open was fantastic. Great questions about who's going to miss next year. You just...
Sometimes,
you know, guys are underappreciated. I get it.
Here we go.
It's not your fault, Dave. It's okay.
No, I give people lead time for questions. Two minutes.
It's your fault. It's okay.
2 minutes. And the Ducks should be calling us, thanking us. We gave them like 4 or 5 options here.
Yes, they should thank us. For many things. Not just that.
Votnin.
I'd go into it, but they've been eliminated. So yeah.
Figured out their situation. They can protect 3D, 7 forwards now.
Yeah, they can use one of the defensemen to make a trade to make them even stronger up front, which I've been advocating.
See, everything's fine, everybody, in Anaheim. Calm down. You're not losing Silverberg. You're not losing Lindholm.
You like the Max Deal and Fowler there?
Max Deal?
Yeah, they're going to get what? They're going to give him
8 years, yeah.
Yeah. You like that?
Yeah. Okay. I got no issue with that. I think 8 years will generate 6.
Yeah, agreed.
6 million.
6 for over 8, right.
Yeah, if it's anything, I'm comfortable with 6, 6.5. It's not my money. I'm comfortable with anything, really. But from a
management standpoint.
Right. Analyzing the situation, 6, 6.5 makes sense.
Yeah, in their structure.
Right. Beyond that.
Well, they've got 2 guys
on 8 years.
So you can't give them, you know.
No.
With no movement clauses.
No, Lindholm's locked up for 5 years, just over $5.2
million. Yeah, that's a good deal. And Vaughton deal, even though he's hurt, was a good deal because he's a productive.
4.875, 3 years to go. Fowler's a $4 million. And then UFA, you lock him in, bring him in $6 million for 7, 8 years. I'd be surprised why he wouldn't want to do that.
Oh, he fits there. It's great. And they believed in him, and he's got the right coach. You know, remember, and I mentioned this on the show before, he was with Randy when he was a rookie at 18. And now, they've joined forces again at 24. And he did, and Josh was right. Brewster was on the last hour. Said he was fantastic in that third round. He really was. He missed the first round against Calgary with a knee injury. But the two rounds he played in, he was fantastic and an integral part of that miracle rally they had against Edmonton in Game 5 as well.
And I just want to let you know, since – releasing the information that's public from StubHub, ticket prices have not gone up in Nashville for Game 3.
I'm sorry. I thought you had more power than that.
Still $1,100
a market maker.
The lowest ticket price. And $8,500. It's not even against the glass.
You push it to at least 86, Dave.
You know, if you go to row 106 against the glass, $7,700.
Maybe our next guest can help you out with a ticket down there, Dave.
I'm not paying $8,500 for a ticket.
All right.
And Lindsay's got access, so she doesn't need it either. Well, I mean, we do too, but
she might know somebody. That
possibly.
Knows somebody, you know.
Lindsay Rowley now joining us on the program, ringside. Yeah, what's going on over there? What's going on with these ticket prices? This is amazing.
Hey, I mean, high demand. What supply and demand? What do you want from me? I don't know. But I mean, it doesn't surprise me at all. It was so funny. It's funny you guys said that because yesterday I was just, you know, I was done where I worked the ACC baseball tournament last week. And I got done and, you know, I was getting back into hockey mode and it dawned on me. I'm like, I wonder how much tickets are going for. And I looked it up and I was like, oh, my God. I couldn't believe it myself. I was like, I mean, I knew it was going to be crazy high, but, hey, I'm with you guys. I couldn't believe it was that high.
You know, Dave, there's one thing that's great about different teams making the Cup Finals, that we get to see the work, hard work of people in market that cover this team all year, like Adam Vigna and Lindsay. Lindsay, we've talked a lot about the Predators. We haven't talked about you at all. Have you gotten to your point in time where you're the silent? It says that your Twitter profile says college athlete. You turn in your clipboard for a microphone. Just talk a little bit about your journey to the point in time where you're now kind of, you know, national prominence covering the Nashville Predators in a cup final?
Well, you know, I've gotten asked that question a lot of times, and I kind of took a backwards way into getting into the industry. My mom was a college volleyball coach my whole life, so I basically grew up in a gym. My daycare was whatever sport was going on at the college. And then I ended up playing college volleyball at High Point University. And then after that, I wanted to go into business. I went and got my MBA at Ohio Dominican and coached with my mom. I was actually her assistant coach.
That's great.
And everybody always said I was kind of born to be a coach. I loved coaching, but it wasn't quite right. So I always wanted to do the whole New York marketing thing. So I did. I moved to New York, and I was doing marketing, and I missed sports. So I moved back, I wrapped up my MBA, and at the age of 24, I took a free internship at a local television network, and I was the oldest intern by about 6 years, and it was a two-month internship turned into 4 months, 5 months. I ended up being a nine-month internship, and then I took a job as an arena host in the NBA, and I was also covering college football. And so I was every week for about 4 months, 5 months, I was driving 14 hours round trip from Ohio to North Carolina. So I was just trying to catch a break anywhere I could. And I was lucky enough to meet Randy Stevens, who is the coordinating producer for Fox Sports South. I told him, you know, hey, I loved covering the Blue Jackets in Ohio. If anything opens up in hockey, I would love to be considered. And I got a call from him, and I was actually covering minor league baseball in Pomona, New York at the time. And he was like, hey, could you come down for an interview like this week? I don't know what you're doing or where you're at. And I drove 14 hours from New York down to Nashville, took the interview, and then drove back to New York and ended up getting the job. So it's a long story kind of, but I'm very happy to be here, and I'm very fortunate because I work with some of the best people, I'm pretty sure, on the face of the planet. Our coaching staff, our players, I'm very lucky. I've turned into the token little sister for sure, but I love it. Really enjoy it.
Dave, forget Ryan Johansson's injury. This is the story of the cup final right there. I'm sorry. Not going to get a better story than that. Okay, Lindsay, so do you wear earplugs during the games?
Oh, my gosh. It's hard to put it into words how loud. For game six, you know, because I do the post-game show on Fox Sports South, so we watch it in the television truck, you know, marking highlights, just getting stuff ready. But the kind of cool thing is that we had a delay. So, I'm sorry, the fans outside had a delay because they're watching NBC and we're watching on the truck. So whenever a goal would happen, all of us would, like, sprint out of the truck because all around Nashville, downtown, they had huge screens set up. I mean, on Broadway, in the Hilton Garden area, and then on the plaza. So it literally, every time they scored, it sounded like an explosion went off in downtown Nashville. It was the loudest thing I've ever heard. It was crazy. And then the post-game show, we did it on the plaza of the arena. And, oh, my gosh, we couldn't hear each other. I was on there with Terry Crist and Chris Mason. And the first thing we said when we came on air is, hey, we apologize if we seem to, like, go off track a little bit because we can't hear each other at all. I mean, there was hundreds of fans behind us chanting, we want the cup, like, just so loud. And, it's a moment I'll never forget in my career. It was definitely one of the most amazing moments I've ever experienced. I mean, even Chris Mason started to get choked up on air. I mean, he started to tear up. And I at one point I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to get it away from Chris because he's about to start crying. So, but it was really cool to experience, especially with two guys like that, you know, a former player and then Terry Crist has won 3 Stanley Cups. I mean, it's just, like I said, an amazing moment.
Are they going to have the same setup for games 1 and 2 on the road downtown?
Yes, they are. Yeah. Okay. They're setting up screens all over downtown. They're expecting it to be just as crazy as it was for the home game. So we say that, but I don't know if you can really touch the level of craziness that it's going to be on Saturday for the first home game. I don't really know what to expect. I don't think you're going to be able to move in downtown Nashville. I mean, my parents are coming down from Ohio. My dad's a huge hockey fan, and he's like, I just want to be in the city. He was like, I don't need tickets. I just want to be in the city. I'm like, all right, come on. So, but yeah, it's going to be really incredible.
Can you believe the ticket price? And we talked about it, you know, on the first hour with Pete Jensen. It's $8,000 to sit on the glass. I think the last row of the upper bowl behind the net is $1,000. That's, and it's football country, so I draw the parallel to Super Bowl pricing. Is it that crazy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, I said I was a little shocked, but once I started thinking about it, honestly, I'm really not that surprised that ticket prices are that high because, I mean, this is, you talk about right now, this city is just on fire for lots of reasons. Number one being the Stanley Cup final, but also CMA Fest is here and Bonnaroo.
Right.
So, I mean, the city is going to overflow. I mean, Broadway's going to run out of beer. It's going to be like the apocalypse. I don't know.
Don't say that, please.
Actually, good story. The last time that they played Chicago in regular season, Broadway did run out. There was three bars that ran out of Bud Light and Coors Light.
Wow.
So I don't know what's going to happen. They better be ready. But yeah, no, it's funny because all these things are here right now, but that's, and CMA Fest, that's huge. I mean,
yes,
that's the highlight of the year for this city, and no one's really talking about it. And that's no offense to CMA Fest or anything. It's just, that's how much this town has really rallied around this team and the Stanley Cup final. I mean, I know a lot of different restaurant owners and things like that, and we're constantly, the organization, getting more and more emails that are, hey, how can I get more banners? We want to hang banners all around our restaurant or all around our office building. And it's like, I look out my window right now and I see three different, those big gold banners that, mm-hmm, they stand with us. I mean, they're all over the city. And so it's crazy. I wish you guys could come down and see it for yourselves because it's hard to describe.
Yeah. Your choice for the national anthem singer for game 3 would be?
Oh God. I mean, I don't know. That would be, I mean, gosh, look at who they've already had. I don't know how they're going to keep the bar that high. I mean, it's been amazing to me because every time I'm like, oh man, who are they going to get? Are they going to be able to keep that bar that high? But, I don't know who it's going to be at this point. I mean, nobody's out of the question. It could be anybody. I mean, my preference, just because I'm a huge fan, like, you know, the little middle, mm-hmm, schooler in me that, like, was, like, screaming NSYNC in my like, bedroom, since I know that Justin Timberlake lives here in town, I mean, that would be mine, just because, you know, the little middle school girl in me would be, like, jumping for joy. I would be, like, a little schoolgirl.
Lindsay, is it hard to be objective at this point? I mean, you've been covering this team all year. You're obviously, everybody's emotionally invested in this great run that the Predators have. Is it tough not to be a little bit of a fan at this point?
It is. It definitely is. You know, I could sit here and say, you know, I do reports for, you know, the NHL Network and different, sure, networks going on, just talking about, you know, the X's and O's and the hockey and, you know, everything like that, where I try as hard as I can to be biased. I really do. But when it comes down to it, I mean, these guys, they're my family. Like I, mm-hmm, I cover every game with them. I'm there every step of the way. Right. I'm the only girl on the plane. And, you know, it's like seeing your brothers do something incredible and to see their dreams come true. And you hear them talk throughout the year about, you know, the cup final and the dream and, you know, raising the cup above their head and things like that. And it's like to think that might be a reality for them. I mean, right now I just got goosebumps. It's really, and the thing is, the other guys, like our video guys, Lawrence Filoni and you know, those guys who put in those hours I sit next to on the plane where they get done with a game and they're already watching film for the next game. I mean, those guys are the ones also who, it would be really amazing for me to see them be able to accomplish something that they've been working for their whole lives. So yes, to answer your question, at this point, it's hard to be unbiased because I just, mm-hmm, I love this organization. I love these, sure, guys, and I want them to win it for them.
So no thoughts of renting out your place to Airbnb for the next 2 weeks?
Actually, I'm not going to lie. I looked into it, but I'm not allowed in my building. And my sister actually lives in the building, and she was like, man, if we were allowed, we have the perfect setup, and you could stay in my place, and we could rent yours out. I'm like, I know. But yeah, but now I can't because my whole family, I come from a big Irish family and they're all coming down for the cup. And I actually just got a puppy and it was born in Ohio and my mom's bringing it down. So it's going to be like the Griswold family Christmas Stanley Cup style. It's going to be ridiculous.
She's Lindsay Rousey. Lindsay, thanks so much for joining us. Nashville Sideline Reporter. Enjoy the time. Enjoy it. Please, you've earned it. You've worked hard all year. Thanks for joining us throughout the season, but really enjoy games 3 and 4. It should be fantastic.
Thanks so much, guys. Have a good day.
Man, I kind of want to go to games 3 and 4 right now. I'm going to give, I've got a wedding.
You got $2,000 for a hotel?
I've got, I'll send you a picture. I'm actually looking up hotels right now. Unfortunately, I got to miss game three. My cousin's getting married in Montreal, so I'm going to give her some crap for booking that one.
But actually, look, downtown hotels are $400 a night, but that's kind of a, you know, if you stay by the airport, it's $150 a night. Right? You rent a car, you drive in. It's 7 miles from the airport to downtown. It's Nashville. It's not L.A. It's not L.A. traffic. So, yeah, I might try. You know, a weekend game, you know, 4 or 6, you know, 6 the cup is going to be in the building, right? So
that's right.
You want to be there for that one.
We'll take a break. We'll come back, talk to Phil Bork, radio analyst for the Pittsburgh Penguins, see what's going on in Pittsburgh land. This is the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio. Welcome back to the show. Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio. I'm Dave here in Toronto. It's Dennis in Los Angeles.
Hey, you got the TVs on over there?
We do. There's a DQ commercial going on right now.
You should put on the MLB Network. Maybe you see a replay of Aaron Judge's first career Grand Slam.
The
Yankees, baby!
Yankee fan always trying to get something in there.
Yep.
This is NHL Network. This is not MLB Network.
It's just an intro. It's all it is. You brought it up.
I didn't
turn the TVs off over there.
I didn't bring it up. How did I bring up the Yankees?
You brought up the TVs.
Like 37 hours ago.
You brought up the TVs. Sports.
Any chance you get, just something Yankee related. I get it. Yeah. It's okay. That's all right.
I am going to the Dodger game after this, actually.
You are, yes.
Big matchup. John Lester, Clayton Kershaw. Coming home, getting dressed, getting on a red eye. Pittsburgh, here we come.
There you go. Off to Pittsburgh tomorrow. That's right. Media day happening right now. Pittsburgh Penguins facing the Nashville Predators. 8 o'clock Eastern throughout the entire series. Game 1, Monday. Game 2, Wednesday. I'm excited.
I think it's a great matchup.
I think so, too. The storylines are obviously there. Everything, it's just, there's a lot going on.
James Neal, Pittsburgh.
Well, we just talked about Nashville side of things. Let's shift gears a little bit, move on to Pittsburgh, see where they're at right now with Phil Bork, radio analyst for the Penguins. Phil, thanks for joining us.
Dave and Dennis, how you boys doing? I'm well, thank you.
Pretty good, pretty good here. Eager to get to Pittsburgh. Joining the festivities. How are things on media day? How's everybody still loose? Everybody geared up, or are the nerves starting to show a little bit?
No, I think today is one of those last days you'll get to relax, and then it's go time. You just try to, I think as a player, you just kind of enjoy this time right now and soak it all in and not get too overwhelmed by it, because media day can be a little bit of a frenzy, as you can only imagine, where you're getting bombarded with questions and some of the same questions over and over again. And you certainly don't want to tip your hand at all as far as X's and O's and all that. But observing the players, it just seemed like they're all having fun with it.
Phil, a sidebar question here. What's it like night in, night out to be in the booth with Mike Lang?
Wow. I don't even know if I can put it in words, because he means so much to me. We have such an unbelievable relationship outside the booth, something that I didn't have with Mike as a player with the Penguins from 82 to 92, and that's my fault for not taking the time to get to know him a little bit better. But I love the guy to death, and I do catch myself kind of sitting back at times just going, man, this guy is so good. He's so polished. His voice is so good. He's taught me so much as a broadcaster that I can't even go into how many times in just a subtle way that – in a friendship way, in a kind of a loving way, you know. He just says, hey, Borky, you know, maybe try this next time. And, you know, he's he sounds as good as ever, and it's a pleasure to work with the Hall of Famer.
Yeah. You're an old defenseman. Well, not old. You're a former defenseman. We won't say old. That's kind of rude. But the challenge for
next week, so I think I do start getting those AARP cards.
Welcome to the club. It's a comfortable one, Phil. So their blue line, the Pittsburgh Penguins blue line, injury certainly, Chris Letang gone. So what are they going to have to do defensively here to keep Nashville, away from Murray? Certainly they're down a couple of centers, but at this point in time, what's the strategy defensively for the Penguins, do you think?
Yeah, I don't think the strategy is going to be much different than it was against Columbus and Washington and Ottawa. Was it, tight gaps, and your gap starts by getting up on the play and not being lazy. If you can join the rush, join the rush, but that's where your gap starts, being stingy through the neutral zone and even stingier when you do have to back off your own blue line. As far as not having Chris Letang, this team is almost numb and callous to so many injuries. So, obviously you miss Chris Letang, but this team just doesn't miss a beat. And I think Justin Schultz has taken his game up another notch again. I think having Ron Hainsey here that can play the right side so well without Chris Letang as a right-hand defenseman. Trevor Daley, healthy, is a big bonus for the Penguins, too. Another defenseman that can play the right side, the offside. And so there's a nice yin and yang, and nobody's really talking about the Penguins defenseman because we don't have a marquee name there.
Right.
But that's okay because the tandems, the duos that Mike Sullivan has together work really well together, and they like flying underneath the radar and nobody talking about them. And the Penguins roll 8 defensemen. I think Nashville's a team that pretty much rolls 4 defensemen, and then they'll throw in Irwin and Weber there, too, to kind of pull up some minutes.
Let's go back 18 months, Phil. Why was Mike Sullivan such a success here? He came in for Johnston. The team wasn't adapting to Johnston's system, and he's just struck gold. He's, one of the, it's great that 2 Americans are in the Cup final as coaches, but why has Mike Sullivan been so successful with this team?
Yeah, it's been remarkable, hasn't it? It really is. It's just been a perfect fit. A couple things. Number one, I don't know if you remember, but the first 4 games that Sully coached as a Pittsburgh Penguins head man, the Penguins lost all 4 games.
Yeah.
And I found it interesting because I heard he was a fiery guy. I knew he had that Irish temper. And he was calm, cool, collected. He never called out one player, which still he's never done. And he was just positive, but he was intense at the same time. I think what's made him successful here, and maybe he was lacking some coaches in the past, is he's fearless. And he doesn't worry about losing his job. And he makes the hard decisions with conviction. And he has a reason why, and he's a great communicator. So when he does make these hard decisions, whether it's in-game, whether it's game-to-game, whether it's series-to-series, whatever, he's communicating with that player where that player is still on board. And also the way he's been able to deal with star players, which I think in all sports, when you have highly paid, large ego, and I'm not saying our guys are like that, I'm saying in general, I think it's tough for coaches to relate to those star players and get them to buy in 100%. And I think that he has the 3 things I think you need to be a great head coach at a major league level. That's respect, fear, and love. And I think he has all 3 of those.
Great point. And you bring up star players, so it's a great way to segue to the next question. This is always going to be Sidney Crosby's team. If they win a 3rd cup, they will have done something that Jagr and Lemieux couldn't do and win 3 cups in Pittsburgh. But I think a real key to this, and it's not really been brought up a lot, I brought it up on the show once before, is that Geno Malkin's willingness to be deferential to Sid. Like on any other team, he's the number 1 star without question, best player on the team. Here, he's the 2nd line center. He's been deferential with respect to the attention and the stardom and everything else, yet he is, I believe, a Hall of Famer in every statistically when it comes down to it. Just a little bit more on Geno's role on this team and how he has been like the 2nd fiddle, but been very, it seems to be very comfortable in that role, Phil.
Yeah, because if you're not winning, then maybe he's not so comfortable, right? And I think that because there's been a winning tradition here, and maybe he has done a little homework into the history of the Penguins and saw when Mario was winning, you had another Hall of Famer, Ron Francis. So you had the 1-2 punch there, the 2-headed monster, whatever you want to call it. And I know Ronnie Francis was a completely different player than Evgeny Malkin. But I think the 2 of them have found that if both of us can be playing at our best on a consistent basis, then we have a really good chance to win the Stanley Cup. And as much as they like to get their cookies and their points, and they're proud hockey players, they're proud people, they like to be on top of the scoring list. I'm sure they love getting the accolades and awards. Who wouldn't? But at the end of the day, I think what means the most to them is winning and winning Stanley Cups. And there's I didn't know hear much about Evgeny Malkin before he came to Pittsburgh and how he was in Magnitogorsk in the KHL. Mm-hmm. But I think that over the years, I've seen him buy into the team approach more. That being a good teammate and being a good citizen means more than anything else to the fans and his teammates here in Pittsburgh. And there's certainly no animosity, resentment. There's nothing between Sid and Gino at all. They're two teammates that understand that they're special players, special people, and if they can get firing on all cylinders, we got a pretty good chance to win a cup here.
We'd be remiss if we didn't discuss Sid Crosby, obviously, in this segment. How important do you think this is to him to win that third cup, to now get on a level of modern day with Jonathan Toews, who's won and is probably the comparable at this point in time, and then certainly, as I mentioned, superseding Mario and Jagr with respect to three rings in Pittsburgh. About his legacy, is it important to him, Phil? Is he just about winning? Does he care about 10 years from now, 20 years from now, where he walks away from the game, how people will remember him?
No, it's a very fair question. So I don't want to discount your question at all, but being around Sid since he came into the league in 2005, I can honestly tell you, without a hesitation in my voice, that Sid, he's a proud person, that he wants to have a good legacy. Of course he does. But I don't think he ever does comparisons with Toews. I don't think he does comparisons with especially with Mario. He puts Mario in a completely different atmosphere.
Sure.
And never feels like he will ever be as good as Mario. And that's just the humility of Sidney Crosby. I think the only thing he wants to do is make himself happy, is have the satisfaction of, I did my very best, and I'll be known as a winner. So I think that, again, this kind of goes part and parcel with what Mike Sullivan sells all the time, is to stay in the moment. It's all about the moment, and it's about the next game and just winning. And then everything else in the rearview mirror will take care of itself, as well as everything in the future. You just stay in the moment and bring your very best.
We're going to assume you're going to pick the Penguins to win the Cup. So as opposed to the pick, their keys to winning, Phil, what do you see them having to do to get by a team that is on a hot streak, has a goaltender that's playing very well, that has a, like you mentioned, core four defensemen who are very, very solid? What are the keys to Pittsburgh winning the Cup?
Well, I think a couple. Let's start with shutting down the top four defensemen from the Nashville Predators. You know, you've got Josi and you've got Ekholm and TK Subban and Ellis. I mean, those are four pretty good defensemen that like to jump up on the rush and contribute offensively as well as being solid defensively. And I think the Penguins saw some of that in Erik Karlsson. They saw some of it in John Carlson. And they saw some of it with the Columbus Blue Jackets also and Seth Jones. So they kind of had a little bit of taste of that. I think they're going to have to get the Pekka Rinne real early. And they've had success against Rinne in the past. He's not had good numbers in regular season against the Penguins. He's like 1-5-2, I think, and 8 starts. And I think his goals against is almost to 4, and his save percentage is somewhere around .880. So that seed's been planted already, and I think you need to fertilize it and water it like you've never done before and kind of get into his head a little bit, because he's been a difference maker. And I think with Ryan Johansson out of the lineup, I think you need to really shut down a guy like Philip Forsberg. And I know that Arvidsson is a good player for them, and respect the goal total that he had, 31 during the regular season, but I think Philip Forsberg is the guy that can be the big difference maker for them offensively.
It all starts tomorrow night, 8 o'clock. Phil Bork will do the call with Hall of Famer Mike Lang on Penguins Radio. Phil, really appreciate you joining us, and enjoy the series, okay?
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. Pens and Preds, it's going to be fun starting tomorrow night, and I enjoyed you guys talking hockey with you guys, and this was good hockey talk.
Absolutely. Yeah, no question about it. Appreciate the time, and I can't wait. I mean, we've been talking about this, you know, for the last several days since the Pens closed things out.
So get in your car and drive after the show. Let's go.
I'm tempted. I'm thinking about it. Either way, we're going to be there for game one, and
And game two.
Game one and two. That's right. We'll start the series off. It'll be a good time out there in Pittsburgh. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We'll talk a little bit more about the Stanley Cup Final and some other ongoing situations happening in the National Hockey League. This is the time now where trade chatter picks up.
Yeah, hot stove. Let's go.
And talking to a lot of people around the league, they're all saying, yeah.
Only a couple of weeks before the expansion draft, Dave.
I'm kind of waiting for the week of the 29th, right after Memorial Day, to give George McPhee a call, see what's going on in Vegas. So, you know, buckle up for that, too. It's not just going to be Stanley Cup Final action. It's going to be some possibility of some movement around the other 29 teams in the National Hockey League now. Anyway, we'll take a break. We'll chat more about that in the Stanley Cup Final. This is the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio. Catch it. It is the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio. I'm Dave Pagnotta. That's Dennis Bernstein. Los Angeles to Toronto. Nashville and Pittsburgh in between. Stanley Cup Final gets underway tomorrow. 8 o'clock Eastern from Pittsburgh. NBC, CBC, TVA. They'll be carrying those games. Or those networks will be carrying Game 1, rather. On the television side of things, we'll have Game 1 here on the network. NBC Sports Network will be taking over for Games 2 and 3 in the U.S., CBC, TVA in Canada. And then NBC the rest of the way for Games 4, 5, 6, and 7, if we get that far, in the U.S. Same CBC, TVA in Canada. See, in Canada, it's a lot easier. You just know. If you're listening to the French broadcast, you're listening and watching TVA. If you're watching the English broadcast, it's CBC. You guys complicate things down there, Dennis. NBC Sports Network.
We're Americans, Dave. Even though we have two American coaches in the final.
For the first time?
Tell that to Don Cherry.
You could tell him.
I love Don. I don't care. It's entertainment.
I know.
You know what, Dave? We're in the toy aisle of life, right? So I know people get serious on Twitter and get all crazy when we express our opinions, but we're in the toy aisle. Have fun with it. So if Don said something outrageous, embrace it.
Usually.
No?
Usually.
Look, I'm an American. I wasn't offended by what he said. It was inconsequential. Phil Kessel was messing around on the boards during a practice during a warm-up. I mean, come on.
The thing about people in general, as a mass unit, if there's an opportunity to, I'll politely say, complain, the real word I want starts with a B.
Yes.
Then people are going to do it.
Especially on social media when there's no consequence.
Oh, no. No. That's the greatest part. Everyone jumps on social media. Internet tough guy.
Internet tough. Do you want the Conn Smythe odds? I got them here.
Yeah, what do you got? Let's see.
Pekkarinen 9-4. Sid and Gino co-second favorites at 3-1. Kessel 7-1. Forsberg 15-2 with Murray 15-2. Justin Schultz 20-1. PK Subban. Roman Josi 20-1 as well. Arvidsson 25-1. Shiri, Gunsel, and Ellis all 30-1. And at this point, the Penguins are in some places minus 165 to win game one at home.
Does your Conn Smythe winner change based on who wins the series? Providing that the the top contenders for it maintain their pace of play?
I will give you a scenario. If Pex plays like he did in round one and they sweep the Pittsburgh Penguins, yes, he will win the Conn Smythe. If he plays to that level and let's say Geno Malkin goes scoreless, then I may give it to Pekka if they lose, right? It mm-hmm. would have to be a superior performance. I don't think there's anybody else. Look, Dave, there's only one player on the Predators who could win the Conn Smythe if they lose, and it's Pekka Rinne.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think
right? So that's the question.
I think barring a huge outburst of offense from any player.
It can't. You'd have to have somebody score 10 goals in a round.
Even if Nashville wins.
Right.
Pecorine is going to win it if the Nashville Predators win.
I can't see him winning it if they lose, though. Because I assume that Geno would get it. I assume because if the Penguins are going to win, I'm assuming Geno was going to put up some points.
Yeah.
I assume he was going to win the Conn Smythe. I don't, and I've voted for it once before. I voted for Justin Williams in 2014. I would have no problem conceptually voting for a player like, I guess you'd have to go back to Ron Hextall in 87 who won the Conn Smythe even though they lost.
Jaguar,
okay. So yeah. That's another generation ago. That's what, 2003?
Yeah.
It's 14 years ago.
Yeah.
So I have no problem as a member of the Pro Hockey Writers Association of voting for a losing player as the best player in the playoffs. But I just don't see it spinning out that way. I think if Peck's going to win, he's going to win as the winning goaltender, not as the losing goaltender. And like I said, I just think that Gino's going to put up enough points if they win to earn the Conn Smythe.
Well, they'll get some assistance. Mike Fisher is expected to be in the lineup for game one.
Yeah, that's big for them, Dave. That is big for them. They need him in the lineup because, you know, Colton Sisson, as I know, it's a great story. His shooting percentage is 35%, Dave. He's like, I don't, and look, it's a small sample size. He could do it for another six or seven games. I don't think he's going to execute a 35% safe shooting percentage in this round.
Mm-hmm.
Might be wrong. Probably right. Probably right. Right. But they need Fisher. Look, it's not like they're going to get some bonanza from Fisher because, Dave, you and I have as many points as Mike Fisher has in the playoffs. He's got no points.
Yeah, but he makes considerably more money than we do.
Well, you.
Oh, excuse me, sorry.
But he's going to eat minutes. He's going to help defend either Sid or Geno, which will help. I don't expect a lot from him offensively because he's truly – look, Dave. On a really good team with two quality centers, he's a third-line center at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
He's being pressed into first-line center service because of the injury to Raja, which happens. But it certainly helps because I don't think that when you line up Sissons and Frederick Goudreau against Sid and Geno, that's going to work. Even with Yarncroke, who really hasn't done much as well, Dave. Again, that's the whole crux of this final. It's like, do they have enough in the middle to just slow down the Penguins? I don't think they're going to stop them. And even with a great defense – you're going to need some support in the middle to stop these guys. And if Bonino wakes up and Colin chips in a little bit more, if you have the same scenario that you had in last year's Cup Final, Dave,
yeah,
where you have those four centers playing well, I don't see how Nashville can win it. I'm not saying they won't win it. It will be very, very difficult, even with Mike Fisher in the lineup, to slow this team down. And they haven't really been kicking in on all cylinders. They have guys that I mentioned in the first hour. You know, with guys like Bonino and Hagelin haven't contributed, if they step up and contribute, because Jake Guentzel has stepped in for a guy like Brian Rust last year who was in the final. This year it's Guentzel. Connor Sheary hasn't delivered. He's been hurt as well. So they've had guys on wing step up. But, again, it's going to come down to Pittsburgh centers against Nashville's defenders. It's as simple as that. And I just think that Pittsburgh has enough juice and they're comfortable with it. And they got, you know, past two game sevens. So in some ways, I think emotionally, this might be actually an easier final for them than the last two rounds.
From Pittsburgh side of things, it looks like Hornquist will be in the lineup for the Pittsburgh Penguins, just kind of spreading the offense around a little bit. And, you know, he was out. He's been day-to-day. You know, he skated in the pregame warm-up in the last game for the Pittsburgh Penguins. But against Ottawa. But just wasn't there right at the bat. And Mike Sullivan said, their head coach earlier today, saying that, you know, we put him out there, wanted to see how he was going to,
yeah,
you know, react to it. He wasn't able to go in, so we pulled him out. But, you know, he's practicing today. The anticipation is that he'll be in the lineup tomorrow. Does that help them?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea because it gives him a different look. He's the grinder in front of the net that's going to cause traffic, right?
Right.
This is a skilled team that has fantastic players, that has speed. And Sullivan always says he did a great interview in Game 7 behind the bench – with Pierre McGuire says, we want to play at speed. If you want to encapsulate Mike Sullivan's attitude about this team and how he wins, we want to play at speed. Now, the one factor they don't have is a lot of grinders in front of the net. Patrick Hornquist is the one grinder in front of the net that gives them a different look. That'll cause traffic in front of Rene. So I'd like to add, certainly he's a gamer. If he's healthy enough to play, I think it just brings another issue for the Predators defense to deal with at this point in time. So anytime, and look, Dave, if you watch these games, there's not these, you know, highlight reel goals. You know, it's traffic in front of the net.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing he does is create traffic in front of the net. So that would be a solid air for Pittsburgh if they can get in for game one.
And I remember last season during the Stanley Cup final, as the games progressed, a lot of members of the San Jose Sharks really voicing their displeasure in a polite way.
He did his job.
So exactly, he did his job. We'll see if he can get in the lineup and do that again against Nashville starting game one tomorrow. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more hockey talk here on NHL Network Radio.
We were staying in Paris to get away from your parents, and I thought, wow, if I could take this in a shot right now, I don't think that we could work this out on a terrace. I don't know if it's fair, but I thought, how could I let you fall by yourself? Well, I'm wasted with someone else. If we go down, then we go down together. They'll say you could.
Back at you to wrap things up here on the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio. Dave Pinota here in Toronto, Dennis Bernstein in Los Angeles. Game one of the Stanley Cup Final tomorrow, 8 o'clock Eastern from Pittsburgh. Dennis and I will be there. Listen to the show, or listen to the game on this program. NBC on TV in the States. CBC TV in Canada for English and French. And as we talked about earlier on in the show, DB, Memorial Day weekend in the U.S. is the Kickstarter for the second silly season.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait.
And it's going to be silly because there's going to be a crap load of trade talk between now and the Stanley Cup final, the end of it. So this thing goes seven. It's going to be a lot of movement, I think, because a lot of teams got to maneuver their expansion draft protection list.
Yep.
By making moves. We talked about Anaheim. The best case scenario for them is if they're going to trade one of their guys like Sammy Vatanen, you got to do it before the protected list come in. You're kind of screwed. Minnesota in a similar spot. We'll touch on them in a second. But I know there's another situation you really want to dive into, so have at it.
Where's Jordan Eberle going?
Yeah, that's the big one. That's one of the big ones. Because everything's pointing to him being moved. And if he isn't, we could even see him available in the expansion draft. That's some of the talk.
Based on that playoff, Dave.
Yeah, well. You know,
what I would do? Here's what I would do. You ready?
Yeah.
I'm Peter Chiarelli. I'm probably going to cut off the first top five teams or maybe top seven teams and then start with team eight in the draft order, call every GM and offer them for that pick. Go to 8, no, 9, no, 10, no, 11. Trade them for a high pick. That's what I would do at this point in time. And if you got to retain $1 million off the $6 million, I'd do it as well.
That's one way to go.
Now, how would you go?
I think... They're at a point now where they want to maintain this. Unless they're going after some free agents or they've got another trade in the mix, I don't know if giving up Eberle for, I don't know, I'm looking at the teams. I can't see him going to Colorado. Can't see him going to Vancouver. Can't see Vegas giving up their first ever draft pick.
You got to go down a little further. A team that's close that might need and you know, that might need someone.
Carolina?
Trade him to Minnesota, Dave, for a defenseman. There you go.
Well, and that could solve Minnesota's. Well, it doesn't solve much for Minnesota, actually.
But
that well,
from
much.
From a protection standpoint, it might.
On the back end, I went through their list right now, and they'd be a little like looking at Minnesota. If Jason Pominville waives his no movement clause, and Minnesota protects just three defensemen, that leaves him with Parise, Koivu, Staal, Coyle, Zucker, Granlund, Niederreiter. So you add somebody else up there, you've got to let one of those guys go. Maybe you leave Staal unprotected.
Well, here's the one thing, though. If I'm George McPhee, I'm calling up Minnesota and trying to get Jason Zucker. Born and raised in Vegas, trained there. Kid coming home.
Yeah, but...
Got to market the team, you know. You can't pick all, you
Jonas
know.
Brodin might be available.
Okay, well, got to score a little bit. But see, here's the thing. I know that we talk about defensemen, but you know George McPhee. You look at the team he built in Washington.
Yeah.
Speed and skill and excitement, yeah. Right? So anytime he has an opportunity to trade for a winger who can skate and score, I think he'll do it. So I think that's what I would do. And because of the connection to the city. I think that maybe I'm overplaying it, Dave, because that's why I talk about Dustin Brown being a great, you know, captain there as their first captain, marketing the team and things of that nature. I'm looking more than on the ice. I know people are looking at, well, can they build a team right now?
Oh,
I'm like, it's
you're right.
3 to 5 years from now.
Yeah, you have to be cognizant of what's going to happen off the ice for your team as well.
Yeah,
for
you have
a brand
to build
team.
The grassroots, and you have to build in the community. You have to have kids that are familiar with the market or willing to do customer service or not customer service, but you know, do charitable work in the community,
right.
Outreach stuff. It's important. I mean, and plus with the Raiders coming in a couple of years, you know, you got a little bit of a head start here. But that's why I think there's more to just the players on the ice. It's about establishing a legacy and identity for Vegas, and I think that's what people are short-sighted with. We're saying, oh, this player will never come. For different reasons, you pick different players, right? And I agree that Brown's contract is probably a little too long for George McPhee's liking, but I think there's other optimal reasons you trade for a player to build this franchise.
Outside of Eberle, do we see another big – is Landeskog or Duchesne – are these guys finally getting moved?
Yeah, I think they'll both get traded by the end of the draft.
Both of them?
Yep.
Well, all right then.
Started from the bottom, now we're here. Yeah, blow it up. What's the point, Dave? What's the point? You didn't win with those players, right?
Yep.
So you can, if you get the right deal, fine. I think that, and that's it. The one great thing about the draft is you got all 30 general managers sitting on the floor together. So I think they're both going to go by the end of the draft. I think it's just time. I think everybody's waved the white flag up there and just start from the get assets. I know you won't drop flies, but you got to find players that fit in a better system and just, you know, find the right GM. But I think they should both go if you can get multiple 5 to 6 assets.
It's good. Like, there's going to be a lot of teams that are – like, I'm looking at Toronto with James Van Riemsdyk, Tyler Bozak.
Yep.
You know, this is another scenario.
And they need defense.
Right. So, I mean, I see them going after someone like Carl Alsner. There was talk of Kevin Shattenkirk. I don't know if Shattenkirk's a fit. Alsner would be, but – It's going to be really interesting to see how this talk evolves over these next, I'd say, 7 to 10 days, because it's going to be significant. It's really going to start picking up. The Stanley Cup Final picks up tomorrow, Game 1 in Pittsburgh at 8 o'clock Eastern, right here on the channel. Dennis and I will be there. Special thanks to Pete Jensen from NHL.com, Josh Brewster, Ducks postgame radio host, Lynn Zerali, the Pred sideline reporter for Fox Sports Tennessee, Phil Bork, Penn's radio analyst, Jesse Ralph behind the glass. That man right there in Los Angeles, that's Dennis Bernstein. This guy here in Toronto is Dave Pagnotta. We will see you later. Enjoy Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final. This is the Fourth Period Live on NHL Network Radio.